Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Freeform is getting more supernatural by the Monday. First came Shadowhunters last January, and now there's Beyond, involving someone waking up from a 12-year coma. Creator and executive producer Adam Nussdorf joins me next. We'll return to the here and now next half hour, as in the here and now of smart TVs and TV-making devices and the implications for us. Our guide will be Roku Product Management Director Lloyd Clark, live from San Jose. Also ahead, all is Golden Globe for The Night Manager, FX, and Netflix. Showtime drops 60 Minute Sports, and our new Classic Trivia Question of the Week. One Day at a Time, the original, the big story. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later this half hour. Now we'll be back with you on this Monday afternoon. Nice day of 2017. Wherever you are, we hope it's a great one for you. Here in New York, it is freezing. 20 degrees at the top of the hour. Feels more like, 13, 14, 15, but it gets better starting tomorrow. We go up to the 40s and then maybe 60 by Thursday. You never know. This is the promo about television. 3 episodes for you this week, starting today, and we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, you raise your voice, you pick up the phone, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world right here on Blog Talk Radio. In case you don't like the phone, that's fine, because we have a chat room you can raise your voice in. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Adam Nussdorf from Beyond will be live with us from Los Angeles after these news notes. The Golden Globe Awards gave a trio of their TV honors to one program last night, The Night Manager on AMC. All three were for actors, Tom Hiddleston, Hugh Laurie, and Olivia Colman. Three other programs made do with a pair of awards each. American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson for Best Miniseries or Movie, and Sarah Paulson's performance as Marcia Clark. Atlanta, another FX newbie last year, had Best Comedy and Comedy Actor, creator and chief overseer Donald Glover. Netflix's The Crown was coronated Best Drama, with Claire Foy likewise as Drama Actress. Blackish co-star Tracy Ellis Ross took the Best Comedy Actress Award, while Billy Bob Thornton landed Best Drama Actor for Amazon's Goliath. The big losers, broadcast television with just one win, that was Tracy Ross's award, and HBO with none, despite 14 nominations. The Jimmy Fallon hosted about NBC had 20 million viewers. That's up 1.5 million from 2016. That's according to early Nielsen ratings. And that's the second largest gross turnout over the last decade. 60 Minute Sports will call it a run on Showtime this April. The monthly offshoot 60 Minutes, focusing on sports issues and personality profiles, has been on Showtime since January 2013. Showtime gave no reason why stopping the CBS News and sports production. And here's something rare, a PBS series moving elsewhere to Netflix. I'll Have What Phil's Having, the food and travel series with Everybody Loves Raymond co-creator Phil Rosenthal that launched in 2015, will get more episodes and maybe a new title for Netflix, relaunch date to come. PBS's motive to Can I'll Have? Just too expensive. And that is news notes for today. Now joining us live from Los Angeles, the creator, head writer, and executive producer of Beyond, tonight at 9 o'clock on Freeform, Adam Nussdorf. Adam, congratulations. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. It looks like a lot of people are turning the show on. You've got about 190,000 Facebook likes, and a lot of people who are making the comments seem to think your show's great.
That's great. I'm so glad. It's a little surreal to have people finally watching it. For the longest time, it was just, you know, a few people in a room trying to, you know, entertain one another. So I'm so glad that other people are finding it and that they're enjoying it.
Surreal seems to be the proper word, Adam, for this series. How long did it take for you to create it? Was there anything personal or anything sort of that you ran across, you encountered, that made this show created?
It came together, I think, over the course of a year, I think, from the initial, you know, idea to actually writing the pilot script. As far as anything personal, I always wanted it to do, you know, to focus on a family, you know, I wanted to tell a family drama. You know, I wanted it to emulate those kinds of, you know, Spielberg movies of the 80s or the Amblin movies like Poltergeist, The Close Encounters, which also, you know, it was really at its core about a family, but had these kind of, you know, otherworldly, supernatural, sci-fi elements kind of woven through. So that was, you know, that was kind of, you know, what I at first set out to make. And I think it's still there in the finished product. So.
But before you did this, you worked on Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. That was the one-year spinoff of Once Upon a Time that's still playing on ABC
yeah.
Sunday nights. How much of that experience helped you to craft the kind of show you want to do with Beyond?
It was very, very valuable. Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, and also Once Upon a Time, they both deal very heavily in mythology. But at the same time, they're both very, very emotional. I know I worked for Kitsis and Horowitz, and I, you know, they'll always put character first, and I think that's a lesson that, you know, I learned from Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, where at the end of the day, you can, you know, have a lot of bells and whistles and special effects, but you have to care about your characters. And don't be afraid to, you know, lean into the emotion and these connections that these people are having with one another. I think that, you know, not being afraid to put that front and center, I think, you know, really informed Beyond and also kind of helped, you know, keep the show grounded in a way. Because it gets wild.
Well, that's definitely the case with Beyond, because front and center of your creation is Holden, who is a young person who is coming off a 12-year coma. Itself could be a story. And it seems that you have family drama, you have coming-of-age drama in sort of an unusual way, and then you have the supernatural elements where we try to find out along with him, A, how he readjusts to society, B, who may be after him, and C, why he had the coma in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it, in a nutshell, yeah.
Well, how did you frame the idea? I mean, what came first? Was it coming of age? Was it, as you said, family drama? Or was it, well, in order to trigger the plot, we have to have this character in a coma?
I think it was coming of age, because that to me seems, you know, like looking at movies like E.T., coming of age was, you know, a big part of that. I love stories with, you know, characters kind of readjusting. Like, I'm a big fan of Rectify, that show. And I just love, you know, a character so out of his element having to adjust to, you know, something new or the world around him. And that is kind of the you know, the adolescent experience. It's figuring out, you know, your place in the world and how to function in society. And you know, wanting to tell a story like that led me to, well, you know, what would remove someone from society, or you know, what kind of incident you know, can I throw at this character to kind of really put him behind the eight ball? And then from there, you know, I discovered the coma, which, you know, then the story became you know, a kid wakes up from a coma and kind of has to, you know, adjust to this new life. And then kind of, you know, the sci-fi area of my brain kicked in. It's like, well, what if he really, you know, what if while he was in his coma, you know, he went to somewhere else entirely? And then it kind of took off from there.
How did you determine the pace of your episodes? Because in Rectify, which just wrapped up, it was a magnificent final season this year, that Rectify has always been known for having a kind of pace where you really get deep into that character. In this case, he comes out of prison after 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
You get to know the family. You get to know the people around him. You get to know the town, which has various degrees of attitude toward, you know, is this guy guilty of his crime or not? And then, of course, the main character trying to sort of find a way to live life the best way he can. But beyond with your character, and that's Holden Matthews, how do you decide the kind of pace that the show would set once he gets out of that coma?
It was all determined by the pilot script. I originally wrote the pilot as, you know, a sample to be hired on other shows. So I needed something that, you know, potentially I could give to people looking to hire writers and, you know, basically, you know, hook them instantly. So after the initial setup, I needed to, you know, ratchet up the action and the tension pretty quickly. And then by the end of the pilot, it gets very intense. So that, you know, you can't really go back to just a straight up, slow moving, introspective character drama. You kind of have to keep the threat front and center. But it is a tricky balance, and it changes from episode to episode. Some episodes will have, it'll be very, 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 very fast paced, and others will just spend way more quiet time with the characters figuring each other out. I think it's best, I think my favorite way to go about writing is to spend a lot of time with the characters up front, and then as the episodes kind of unfold, you slowly ratchet up the tension, and culminates in some type of, you know, really exciting climax. I think the pilot does that for sure. I think a lot of the episodes you'll see get way more intense as they go on.
We're speaking with Adam Nussdorf. He is the creator, the head writer, and the executive producer of Beyond. It is Freeform's first new series of 2017, and it happens tonight at 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time, right after the latest episode of Shadowhunters, the sort of supernatural doubleheader you can find on the network. And also, all the episodes of the first season are available in various ways, including on demand and on Hulu. We'll talk more about that as well in a little bit. Adam joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. On Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from the other coast, New York, where it's 22 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you starting your week off with us here on Blog Talk Radio. You have a question or comment for Adam? Get the call in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. As mentioned earlier, this is the first of three episodes we are doing, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at this hour. And coming up on Wednesday, we got a blockbuster bunch of guests for you. We kick it off with Gloria Calder and Kellen and Mike Royce, the executive producers of Netflix's acclaimed new series of One Day at a Time, which made Friday to rave reviews. A lot of people think that's going to be up for Emmy Awards this fall and Golden Globe Awards next January, and they're our lead guest. Then we have a Discovery Channel series we discovered. It's called The Wheel. It's a very unusual survivalist story about ordinary people thrown into remote corners of the world, and there's a major twist. We will have the producer of that program, Sam Corkus. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3:10 Eastern, New Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Adam, take us through how the plot goes. When Holden, the main character, comes out of the coma, what happens? What does he have to deal with as time goes on?
He has to pretty much deal with everything he's missed. He goes in the coma when he's 13 and wakes up when he's 25. So basically everything you learn in between, you know, within those years, he has to kind of dive right into, which includes, you know, learning to drive in the pilot, talking to girls, asking girls out, going on dates, dealing with his parents, who still, you know, sometimes may think of him as a 13-year-old boy, but he's not, he's 25. And also dealing with trying to connect with a brother who last he remembers he was 6 years old. And that's just, you know, not including the people trying to kill him.
The person who plays Holden, his name is Berkeley Duckfield. Some folks who are fans of Nickelodeon might remember him as one of the stars of House of Anubis, which was Nickelodeon's five-day-a-week drama. Tell us about how he got the role.
He's from Vancouver, so we saw him on tape, and he read for both Luke and Holden, and I mean instantly he was the star. And it was, he auditioned with a scene that has very, very little talking. And for a while, it was impossible to cast because it's, you know, you're trying to look for someone who can completely captivate you just with, you know, eye movement or just like a half smile or just a lot of nonverbal acting. And he nailed it. And he was, you know, you felt for him. That to me is really what led me to Berkeley is you completely empathize with him. And it's tough because he's so good looking. So you hate him, but He's you know, so charming and the nicest guy, and I think all of that comes through with the performance.
Your cast, by the way, comes from all over the place, from Glee, from American Crime Story, People with O.J. Simpson, from mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time, Da Vinci's Demons. What's it like to put this cast together and sort of put them in their paces to work with Holden's character to make things go?
I cannot be happier with this cast. They're all absolutely so incredible. And they all bring something completely different to the show and also to the relationship with Holden, which is great. You know, certainly Dylan, Willa brings a tenderness to it with her scenes with Holden. Luke, played by John Lightsell, you know, he kind of has a brotherly wisecracking sensibility, but also, you know, I see this a little bit of a darker streak, a little bit of resentment that he brings to it. You know, all of these characters, when you put them in a scene with Holden, I mean, those scenes, you know, they're all completely different, and you can, you know, really explore different themes, and, you know, it lets you, you know, see a different side of Holden when they're playing off someone who's, you know, so unique.
Since the lead character is waking up from a 12-year coma, did you do any research in terms of speaking with doctors or speaking with hospitals that deal with coma patients to see if you could get a better sense of what a character waking up from a coma would be like, and also maybe get even some ideas for, like, future stories or, like, you know, backstories about what the main character experiences while in a coma?
Yeah, that's we did a lot of research very early on, just to make it somewhat plausible, but it's, you know, it is, you know, very heavy in sci-fi territory, so a lot of times we would just kind of, you know, try to operate, you know, from a place of purely fiction. We try to use a little bit of science, you know, now and then just to ground it. I'm more interested in kind of, you know, fringe science and, finding information, you know, about consciousness. And there's so much we don't know about consciousness and what is and isn't possible. But finding those little nuggets of information that can kind of let you leap off and jump to, you know, something, you know, totally out there. Those are the things that I gravitate to. I mean, for example, you know, reading about how your consciousness, how you can, you know, use your mind, the electrical signals in your mind to talk via a computer or something like that. Taking that idea and translating it to, well, can you use your mind to talk on a cell phone then? You know, we try to start from a place of reality, but eventually we make some very big science fiction leaps.
Speaking of science fiction, you have two fellow executive producers who have great credentials in that situation. One is Tim Crane, the creator of Heroes, who was on our show a number of years ago and is working on another project. And David Icke from Battlestar Galactica, of course, Peabody Award-winning series for sci-fi, one of the great science fiction series of recent years. What's it been like to bring them aboard, and what do you get from, and have they contributed scripts, and what kind of guidance do they give you in terms of making this show work?
So much guidance. They've done this before. They've worked on, you know, character-driven sci-fi dramas, so they know when to push the mythology, pull back on the mythology, push the character elements, pull back on the character elements. They know what will anger audiences and what will entice audiences. They've been great at nudging me out of my comfort zone, because they've been doing this for so long, and because they've had such success, that they're also trying to do something different. So if, you know, sometimes I'll pitch an idea that, you know, maybe I've seen before, and they'll, you know, kind of force me to find, well, what's the new angle on this? And it's been, it's been great. I wouldn't be able to do it without them. So I'm so glad that they responded to the show and they're involved.
They Like Adam are executive producers of Beyond. It's the new series on Freeform. You can catch it tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time for the latest episode of Shadowhunters. We've got Adam Upthorpe. He is the creator, the head writer, the executive producer of the series, and he's with us live this half hour from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum, with you live from New York Delight. You are aboard wherever you are, listening across the country, around the world. If you have a question or comment for Adam, well, pick up the phone, use this number, 646-652-2906. Well, get into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. On our third episode, coming away Friday, we'll introduce you to a Fusion correspondent and co-anchor who used to work for Oprah Winfrey when she had her Harpo production company. She recently got back involved with Oprah for a special about one of her pet projects, the girls' school she runs in South Africa. It's a project coming up on Fusion later this month as a special called Oh Girls. Kimberly Brooks will join me live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. This is a very unique project for not just you, but for Freeform, because for the very first time, they're taking a television series, all 10 episodes of this first season, and they decided we're going to put them all together and give them to the public on Hulu, give them to the public on Freeform's own website, and also on video on demand. Did you know that was going to happen when you started production? And if you did, how did that impact the way the show was produced?
I certainly did not know that when we started production. In fact, we didn't find that out until we were well into editing the final episode. We were very, very, very late in the game. But if we had known that going in, I don't think it would have changed anything. Looking back at the episodes, we were under the assumption that we'd have to keep people hooked and we'd have to keep people thinking about the show, you know, in the 6 days that we're not on the air. So, you know, we'd structure every episode to end on a massive cliffhanger. So when you have the ability to watch all of these episodes now, you know, they still end with cliffhangers. The only difference is you don't have to wait 6 days to, you know, scratch that itch. You can dive right in and kind of steamroll through the season. But I think it's great. You know, I binge tons of series along with the rest of the world. So it's great. It'll be interesting to see, you know, the lag in people who have finished the series versus those who watch it week by week, but it's interesting.
In a way, do you feel it's sort of a badge of honor on your work that Freeform thinks so highly of it that they said, okay, let's try this, let's have your series be the first to give a try to the idea of putting out all the episodes before the premiere?
It's been great. It's been really freeing in that, you know, no one quite knows. I try not to look at numbers and ratings anyway, but because this is the first time we're doing this and it's so new to all of us, there isn't really metric or measurement to stack the ratings up. It is exciting, and you're right, it does show, you know, enormous faith in the show, which is, you know, it's humbling and, it's fantastic.
So where do we go from here, starting with the episode we'll be on tonight?
The episode tonight, I think, is episode 3. At this point, Holden has, you know, tried to go at his own. He doesn't want outside help. I think he's having visions and his powers are kind of manifesting at, you know, awkward times and putting people that he loves in danger. He finally goes to the mysterious character Willa for help. She says she knows how to help him. This is kind of his last-ditch effort to figure out just what the hell happened to him in those 12 years. Who is this girl? Who are these people chasing me? So he kind of gives himself over to Willa's, strange techniques at helping him work through his supernatural issues. So expect some. It's a really emotional episode, not just you know, between Holden and Willow, but also with the family too, and Romy and Michael and Luke all do, you know, amazing work. As you know, Holden learns another shocking secret about his family and what happened to them while he was in his coma. But I don't want to give it away. So,
you got it. Absolutely, Adam. In the last couple of years, Freeform has, Fallout Agency Family has come up with a reputation for doing strange, supernatural teen and family drama. Fishers, the procedural that started 3 years ago, going to the third season later this year. Then last year, the beginning of Shadowhunters, based on the Mortal Instruments books. And now, Beyond. You can catch Beyond tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on Freeform, right after a new episode of Shadowhunters. Check your local listings for where Freeform is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, it's freeformgo.com. It's freeform.go.com. And if you want to catch all 10 episodes to binge, go on Hulu, go on Video On Demand through your local cable or satellite operator, or the Freeform app at freeform.com. Adam Nestor, creator, head writer, executive producer of Beyond. Thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on launching the show, the early reaction to it, and hopefully a wonderful long run is in store. It's been a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks. A pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Simon.
You're welcome, Adam. All the greatest. Take care.
You too.
Adam Nestor, creator, executive producer, head writer of Beyond on Freeform, joining us live from Los Angeles. We're on our Cracker Trivia Question of the Week on One Day at a Time shortly, but right now, a word from the fine folks at Audible.com. Have you checked out Trevor Noah's book, Born a Crime, about his life in South Africa and some of the tales he got while being raised a child there? Well, it's a great audiobook experience, and you can have it now by getting involved with Audible.com. Books like What Trevor Noah is Doing is a reason why Audible is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information. Over 108,000 titles you can choose from at any time, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, that's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, like Born a Crime, and you get a 30-day free month trial of the service. Remember, with Audible.com, because it's an Amazon company, the customer service absolutely top of the line. So get into the sound world, the digital sound world. Try it out. Audibletrial.com/televised. Audibletrial.com/televised. And you can find out for yourself why Audible.com is a great sound gift that lasts all year long. And now it's time for our Clap and Trivia Question of the Week. And if you're first with the correct answer, you can win the wonderful book, Britcoms, FAQ About the World of British Sitcoms, Past, Present, and Future, published by Applause. As I mentioned on Wednesday, we are going to have, starting off, an exclusive live interview with the creators and executive producers of the new version of One Day at a Time that got on Netflix last Friday, rave reviews, Gloria Calderon-Kellis and Mike Royce. Our question this week, in tribute to them, is about the original One Day at a Time that was on during the 70s and 80s from Norman Lear on CBS. And it deals with the main character that was originally played by Bonnie Franklin, and that's Anne Romano. Here's the question. Name Anne Romano's original boyfriend. Name Anne Romano's original boyfriend. We want either the actor's name or the character's name. Either one, if you first put the correct answer, either one, you win. So once again, name Anne Romano's original boyfriend. It was happening on the first and second seasons of One Day at a Time, the original series on CBS. We'll either take the actor's name or the character's name. So, if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. First correct answer wins, Britcom FAQ from the wonderful folks at Applause Books. If you just missed the question, came in late, don't worry. I'll post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and on my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. And we will repeat the question on Wednesday's episode when we have our lead guest, Gloria Calderon-Kellis and Mike Royce, the executive producers of the new version of One Day at a Time, which you can catch right now on Netflix. This is Broadly Televised. We are the program All About the Tube. We're with you this week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you want to catch up on recent episodes, lower homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, you can also check out my Tamale Televised video segments. They're on in the local area, live on BK Live. We had our first one, in fact, this past afternoon with Michael Yanez, the head of HITN, the Spanish Language Television Network based in Brooklyn, and they have a lot of plans on the fire for this year. You can catch that segment on youtube.com/BRICTV, youtube.com/BRIC.TV. And you can also catch BK Live every Monday through Thursday from noon to 1 p.m. throughout New York City on Verizon Files, throughout Brooklyn, Manhattan on Charter Spectrum, and throughout Brooklyn on Cablevision Systems and RCN. Again, all the segments are presented about a day or two later at youtube.com/BRICTV, youtube.com/BRICTV. We come back. What happened at CES regarding smart TV sets and smart devices? We've got somebody who knows because that person was there. And that person is Lloyd Clark, the product management director at Roku. He joins us live from San Jose after we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the KID Unplugged Show. Check it out tonight, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, you get the best of BTR 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televised this Monday afternoon, 9th day of 2017. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York, Elijah Board. Another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. Just give us a ring at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Well, over the last 5 days or so, we had CES in Las Vegas. It drew over 175,000 people to the convention center and other buildings there to find out the latest and greatest in consumer electronics. And what we wanted to find out was, what's happening in the world of smart TV sets and smart connected devices like Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire TV, and Roku. So why not go to one of those sources? And we've got that person right now. Joining us live from Roku and from San Jose, California, the product manager director at Roku, Lloyd Clark. Lloyd, great to have you with us. Welcome back from CES.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
And great to have you with us. Lloyd, for you, what was the big TV story at CES the last 5 or so days?
Well, that's an easy one for us, of course, because I work for a company that makes a TV operating system. So, of course, I'm going to say it's Roku. Roku is doing an amazing job of building an operating system, and now we are on so many TV sets. Can you believe this? We've only been working with TV partners for about 2 years now, and already 1 in 8 TVs that are smart, that are sold in the United States, are a Roku TV OS. Can you believe that?
Unbelievable. By the way, I want to welcome guest 1032 into our chat room. If you have a question or comment, get in that room. SimonApple04, but you find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It seems from afar that one of the big stories of smart TV sets is, in fact, the idea of operating systems in the television set. In addition to what you folks did, Amazon Fire TV became an operating system in like 3 or so. Seiki, I believe, the Chinese manufacturer of TV sets, been around for several years. A couple of others are going to use them. So it seems that somebody likes your idea so much that perhaps maybe it's time that all these different players like you and Google Chromecast and Amazon and so forth become operating systems for the smart TVs.
We do see that as the trend that TVs will license operating systems like ours, and we see it's really coming down to two major players, ourselves, and then, of course, Google has an Android operating system. There's probably one TV manufacturer that is going to continue to invest in their own, and that's Samsung. We think all the rest is going to choose between ours or Androids.
How is that going to impact how we use these smart TV sets and use devices like yours, especially if in addition to an operating system being incorporated intelligence sets, that something like Alexa, something like Apple Siri, something like some other sort of voice-controlled artificial intelligence device becomes part of the TV process?
Well, an operating system has a lot of benefits, especially for a connected product like this, that we can offer new features directly through a download. For example, just before Christmas, we gave an update to all of our TVs that are in the market with the ability to now pause live television. So you can just add a USB thumb drive to the back of your television. You can pause up to 90 minutes. So if you want to stop your show that you're watching on your TV tuner, and you can go answer the door, go get a coffee, go whatever you need to do, and come back and watch the rest of the show. So those are features that we can add because we're connected and it's a software operating system. So we see more and more things like that happening in the future.
Is your company considering some type of a device like an Alexa or something like a Siri and incorporating it into your process, whether it is the streaming stick, the plug-in, or the TV operating system?
We are always looking at new technologies, and as they develop and seeing how they might apply and make things simpler for customers. The way we use voice right now is really as a shortcut. So voice technology has been around for a while, you know that. You can talk to many different things, but for Roku, voice is used to get to the show that you want to watch as fast as possible. So we have a search that searches across all the top channels, and voice is an easier way to input that instead of inputting text. So if I want to watch something from Morgan Freeman, I can just say his name, and up will come up on my screen all the different shows and all the different movies that Morgan's have done that are available on Roku, and I can just choose directly from there.
What was the big message that your company wanted to deliver to everyone who came to CES?
There's a couple things that we're leading the market in, and one is the idea of an operating system. So that's one thought. Like even yourself, you're seeing this very clearly, that operating systems are the way to go for televisions. The other is, of course, that TV will be streamed. We've said this from the beginning of when we started making video players, and more that is coming true. You take a look at Roku customers themselves. They stream more every year. In fact, last year, our customers streamed over 9 billion hours. It's a phenomenal shift in how people are watching television. So operating systems are running televisions, and TV is being streamed. It's a changing world for television.
One example of how it's changing is the latest stats suggest that at least half the American public, and maybe as high as 60% or more, now have either a smart television set, a player like Roku, and in some cases, both. And it appears from whatever research people are getting, and the or anecdotes, that this is how people are watching Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and CISO and Fortune, et cetera. That it really is, if you want to break it down, not really over the top, it's through the television set. If you consider the definition of over the top being apart from the TV set, that's a misnomer now, because they are watching through the television set. They're not watching on the smartphone or the personal computer or the tablet.
Yeah, that big screen in the living room, it's a different kind of experience entirely from that small screen that you hold in your hand. And it's really meant for great immersive kind of shows. Well, even the guest you had on just before me, that show sounds really interesting to me, and I think I'm going to start streaming it and binging it this weekend. There was certainly a concern a little while ago, a couple of years, everyone was thinking everything's going to move to mobile. But we are definitely seeing a resurgence of TVs, of people watching in the living room, and it's because of streaming. It gives you the power and the control of what you get on the Internet, except on that big screen.
Are people acknowledging that in public? When you talk to channels like Netflix, like Hulu, like Amazon, like YouTube, et cetera, are they willing to say that in public, like, hey, this is how people are watching us? When I was at the Digital Content New Frontier in New York last spring, you had some people willing to say that for the first time, like a Hulu, like a Crackle, or if they had said it before to really elaborate, you know, unquestionably, this is it. And you have Susan Wysocki of YouTube saying, yeah, a growing number of people are doing it. And you still have some people sort of being very nonchalant or being very hesitant to spill the beans that way.
Yeah, more and more of these channels are absolutely shifting to the television. And streaming television is really becoming more what we used to call traditional television, especially with the advent of live. Like you look at the Super Bowl. Super Bowl was watched through streaming, the Olympics, the debates, the election night. More and more of these major events are being streamed and available through Roku. So I think that more and more you'll see channels and content companies becoming part of this as this is becoming the reality of television.
Lloyd Clark is the product management director at Hulu. I'm sorry, product management director at Roku, one of the leading companies with smart TV sets and smart TV making devices. He joins us live from San Jose this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And if you have a question or comment for Lloyd, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we are doing this week. We're on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And coming up on Wednesday, special edition, we lead it off with Gloria Calderon-Kellen and Mike Royce, the executive producers of Netflix's acclaimed new version of One Day at a Time. It's getting rave reviews since it premiered this past Friday morning, and we will have Gloria and Mike live with us off the bat. And then Discovery Channel has a new series premiering later this week. It's called The Wheel. Think of it as Survivor with ordinary people engaged in the remote corners of the world, but with a very unique twist of time. And we will have the executive producer of that series, Sam Corkus. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Going into 2017, Lloyd, how many channels does Roku have, and how many channels do you add, let's say, in the course of a week or a month?
It's an amazing amount that we add on a regular basis. It's somewhere close to 10 or a little bit more that we add every week. And we just announced our latest update at CES as far as how many total we have, and we have over 4,500 channels available to watch. And if you add up all the TV episodes and all the movies, that is over 450,000 choices that you can make. There's certainly a lot to watch in streaming.
What are some of the newer channels that you've launched?
One that's coming that I'm very, very excited about very soon to Roku is the Comcast Xfinity app. That channel is coming to Roku in the next number of weeks, and there's another proof point showing that more and more TV is coming to streaming.
Mm-hmm. What's your sense about how many of these channels like CBS All Access, like Full Screen, like CISO are going to be popping up in the course, let's say, the next year or so, ones that emphasize original programming?
You know, we're seeing a couple trends. That's one of them. The other trend is these small bundles. And maybe you've heard of PlayStation View. Maybe you've heard of Sling TV, there's DirecTV Now, even Comcast Xfinity one is combining things together. There's Charter Spectrum. I think we're going to see a lot more of these in the next year or so that are bringing multi-channels together through streaming. So, yeah, there's live and there's others when they're being bundled together and available on a Roku.
Just from the cable operators or the satellite providers like DirecTV and Dish, or do you see other people trying the same approach?
I don't have information on each specific one, but I think there's going to be multiple of them. There's already a number of them today, and you're going to see a lot coming this year.
Yeah. A year and a half ago, Tim Cook, the head of Apple, declared at an event, the future of TV is apps. He started last year with about 1,000 apps. Apple TV is going into this year with 9,000 plus. A quarter of them are games. But what's fascinating is the kind of apps that they are now putting on the set. Things like the ability to have services from Airbnb and Zillow and TripAdvisor, the ability to order pizza from Papa John's, the ability to order tickets from StubHub, the eBay subsidiary, the ability to use Twitter on the set, the ability to use eBooks. And in a story that, frankly, I'm amazed did not get coverage by a lot of people covering the tech world, that if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber using Apple TV, you can order any Amazon merchandise you want from the entire catalog, you know, books, tape, all sorts of things, through the television set. And Amazon Fire TV is also doing that too. And I'm assuming that with the operating system and TV sets that we will see Twitter on there on the TV sets that use that operating system. What's Roku's position on apps, especially now that you're starting to see the likes of a Papa John's, a Zillow, an Airbnb, a StubHub, now getting involved with services that use the TV set?
Yeah, there's a lot of those that are starting. We see, honestly, the killer app for television really is still television. It's watching movies, it's listening to music, it's watching TV shows. The vast majority of time spent on a Roku is doing exactly that. And we are, by far, the number one provider of hours through a streaming service. And many, many different analysts and companies have looked at this now, and the one that's used the most when it's in a home is a Roku, and they're using it to watch. Yeah, they're using it to watch the show that we just talked about. They're using it to watch sports. They're using it to watch comedy live. It's an entertainment platform.
Yeah. Have any app developers like a Papa John's or a Zillow, et cetera, have they approached Roku about perhaps getting on in some way, or even a Twitter to use them, or Facebook?
Facebook and Twitter are on there. I don't know about a Papa John's. With 4,500, I don't know them all. as I said before, really the majority it's about TV. It's about watching movies. It's about entertainment.
Yeah. Speaking of entertainment, one area that did not get a lot of play, or at least not in a big way, believe it or not, was virtual reality, augmented reality. It seemed to be quite muted. Aside from products that have been on the market for some time. And I mention this because one of the things we've been exploring on this program, Lloyd, has been virtual reality on the television set. For the last year plus, Apple has had an app called Little Star, which is based here in New York, where you can see 360-degree programming, virtual reality program on the television set, and you use your Apple control or Siri with your voice to dictate which way the picture goes. Has Roku explored that at all, the idea of running virtual reality programming without the use of headgear or glasses?
It does seem to be something that certainly has caught the eye of a lot of new kind of content creation. It's not the major thing what people are doing right now on the platform. So I don't have any examples of people trying it on Roku. There may be some in there. The vast majority, again, is still it's TVs and movie episodes or movies and TV episodes.
Hmm. How is Roku publicizing and marketing your various products and the operating system? And I ask that because it seemed that this fall, which is normally a time when you see a lot of TV ads for TV sets, whether it is from Samsung, Vizio, et cetera, or from operating systems like yours, and Apple and Chromecast and so on, it seemed this year two things were happening this fall. One was very little advertising, at least on networks or broadcast television. And secondly, there seemed to be a sense that the journalists who cover technology are not covering the smart TV world and your world as comprehensive as they could be. Am I off the base, or are you feeling the same thing too? That there didn't seem to be a lot of impetus to really get comprehensive about this unfolding world, despite the fact, as I mentioned before, that half the American public now has a smart device or set in use.
I think the tech press has been covering this for quite a long time and has been very kind. Of course, we always appreciate any more. What we are seeing is more of the lifestyle and general and business press seeing this as a major trend when it comes to this changing shift in how people are watching television. As far as advertising and promotion, we find the best is digital and in-store. So when people are online, that's when we present our message to them, or when they're in-store and together with our retail partners, we make sure that they understand the benefits of Roku. Now, of course, our TV partners do a lot more. So whether it be TCL or Hisense or even Best Buy, they have their own house brand. They're doing partnerships with sports teams. They're making sure that they're on Ellen giving away televisions to her audience. They're doing a lot more broad-based advertising. So it covers really all parts of the communication platform.
Mm-hmm. By the way, within store, have you noticed any shifts in terms of how people in store, whether it's Best Buy or another electronics maker, or a mom-and-pop store anywhere in the country, how they're marketing? Is there any big shift in terms of how they showcase a Roku, how they showcase sets or other devices, let's say from a year or even 5 years ago?
With a lot of stores are turning these on inside the store, and that helps a lot to really demonstrate how simple these can be used in the home. And this is one of the hallmarks of what Roku has done so well is make an operating system usable. You know, it's finally a smart TV that everyone can use. It's the kind of product that you can give with confidence to even an in-law as a present and not have to worry about getting that tech support call. So we've seen that retailers are really behind the category. It's growing in all aspects, whether it's the TVs or our standalone players as well. So we've been making retail set-top players or boxes and sticks since 2008. And that business is growing double digits in, as well as the televisions.
We're speaking with Lloyd Clark. He is the product development manager and director, product management director. We're going to get this right. Product management director at Roku, one of the leading smart TV-making device players around. And by the way, if you want to know more about Roku and all the ways you can get Roku, as an operating system inside your TV set, as a streaming stick, another means too, you go to Roku.com, R-O-K-U.com. Lloyd joins us live from San Jose, California, this half hour on Tamabi Televised. I'm Apple Van Hooley, live from that other coast, New York, where it is 22 degrees at the top of this hour. Your question or comment for Lloyd? Don't be shy. Use the phone and this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Coming your way on our program Friday, you'll meet a former worker for Oprah Winfrey's production company, Harpo. She's now a correspondent co-anchor at the network Fusion. And she's got a special where she just interviewed Oprah about one of her pet projects, the famous girls' school she had going in South Africa. The program is called Oh Girl. It runs on Fusion before the end of the month. And we'll be speaking with Kimberly Brooks. And that's coming up Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, along with others, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. This year, Apple is expected to get into the original television production business with a number of projects, planned the apps, Carpool Karaoke, which I understand was showcased earlier today through CBS at the Television Critics Tour in Los Angeles. Facebook is now looking at doing TV content. Do you see a scenario where Roku would commission its own program?
We don't work with our own programming. We're happy to deliver and connect our customers to the content and content owners of multiple different countries. So we're that Switzerland of streaming that sits in between, that allows you to choose what you want to watch and where you want to watch it. And we don't try to keep you in one place or another. We really let you choose and where you want to watch the show.
What do you see as the next technical breakthrough for Roku, the next technology breakthrough?
I see us keep doing the same thing. It's exposing shows. It's getting people to different channels. It's helping them increasing their viewership. Already we're the biggest platform, the most streaming hours, and you'll see more and more efforts both on our software as well as on our hardware to help people get to the show that they want.
Before we go, I wanted to get your thoughts about going back to our first guest, Adam Nussdorf, and his series Beyond, which Freeform is taking a very interesting gamble on by releasing all 10 episodes before the premiere last week on Hulu and on Freeform's own app and on video on demand through cable operators and satellite operators. It seems we're seeing more and more broadcast cable shows experiment with this idea to get the binge watcher, the growing universe of binge watchers, thanks to Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, and products like yours, to release all the episodes of a season ahead of time. I'm curious how you see this trend evolving, and does this become the majority way that a show gets introduced ahead of the premiere, and how do you think that's going to impact how we view programs?
It's been interesting watching that. I don't have a lot of personal comment or industry insight, except it's actually just more personal that I've seen this affect how I'm watching. So when a new show comes on and it's got 13 episodes, I'll sit down and watch three or four right away, and I might finish the season in a week or so. And I have seen many try this kind of delivery method. So it's been fascinating to watch this change and use of the ability of streaming. So it's good to see that other companies are trying this.
And finally, what's your sense about this era of peak TV, what some call peak TV, the era of this volcanic eruption of scripted TV programming from all over the place and all the forces that want to make scripted happen, whether it's broadcast, networks, cable, multicast, networks like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, et cetera, new services like CBS All Access and CISO and Full Screen, Machinima and so forth. Do you see it continue to expand? Or do you see a contraction at some point? Or do you see it be like a library, some people say the library, where with your service, you said you have now 4,000 networks that are represented from all over the world going through your service, and you can pick and choose what you want. What's your sense about where things are going?
So by peak TV, if you mean when people are watching, we do see, prime time being spread out a little bit. People are still certainly watching at night, as they normally do, but they can start at 7:35 if they want to, rather than 8 o'clock. They can decide when they want to watch. It still congregates where you think it might, when people are available, when they're not working. So we see that continuing, especially with the choice of control that you get through streaming. Now, I forget the last, pardon me, there was a second half to your question. I forget that one.
Which is, are we going to continue to see increases in the amount of original, particularly scripted programming that's out there, or at some point do you think it's going to collapse?
What I see is more and more great quality television because there is more consumption. So whether it's through Amazon or Netflix or Hulu or whoever's making the content, whether it's the HBOs or the big broadcasters, there's a lot of great content that is available. So I see that continuing to grow.
Lloyd, I think you just made a lot of people who want to get into this field very, very happy. They like your last comment.
Well, let me tell you, there's also something on Roku that if you are an owner of content that you want to get in front of a lot of users, and Roku right now has 13 million households that are actively using Rokus, there is a very easy way to put your content onto Roku. We have something called Roku Direct Publisher that if you've got your own content on a feed somewhere, you can very simply get it set up to display on a Roku, and we'll help you.
You never know. You might be the next Netflix out there. That's a nice tongue twister. Next Netflix. Nice tongue twister out there. And you want more details about Roku and what it's up to, whether it is as an operating system in your smart television set, as a streaming stick, plug-in, etc., here's where you go online, www.roku.com, www.roku.com. Lloyd Clark, Product Management Director at Roku, thank you for making the time post-CES to be with us. Congratulations on what you and your folks are up to. It's a pleasure to have you on, and let's have you back soon. And also give our best to Anthony Woods, the head of Roku. He was on our show quite a number of years ago, and I'm happy that we finally got someone else from your service back with us. All the very best to you, and have a great, great year ahead.
It's my pleasure, and I'll definitely say hi to Anthony for you. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome, Lloyd. Take care. Have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Lloyd Clark, Product Management Director at Roku, joining us live from San Jose, California. Wednesday on Smart Me Televised, the people behind Netflix's big new hit, One Day at a Time, which made this past Friday, Gloria Calderon-Kellett and Mike Royce. Then, from the new Discovery Channel series, The Wheel, executive producer Sam Cordes. And on Friday, from the new Fusion special, Old Girls, host and Fusion correspondent Kimberly Brooks. That's all coming up Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget to check out the podcast version of the program. It's available 24/7, both at iTunes.com and on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. You can download it to your smartphone or tablet anytime and take us on the go when you travel. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's program, and where's your thoughts about the future of TV, where it's at? So let us know. Give us a ring. And by ring, I mean email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, that's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. Also, that's how you get involved in our regular feature, A Show to Know. Is there a TV series you like that doesn't get enough attention? Well, let me know. If we use your suggestion on the air, of course, you get the credit. simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonCWBT. However you communicate, we appreciate it, because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. And he chose Blog Talk Radio's general manager, the creator of this very enterprise, Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. If you're in an area that's on the freezing zone, please stay as warm as you can. It does get better from here. We'll be back Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Please be safe and be great out there. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.